You are listening to a One Flower Two Turtles audio production.
Hello, oh, hello. Welcome back to Baba Dudes. Today we talk about films and TV for a change. I'm not going to do that.
I tried.
You're quite good at impressions. I can do voices, but I can't do, like, impression voices.
Yeah, I can do a good Shaggy and Scooby-Doo.
Like Scoob!
There you go.
There's Shaggy and Scooby. And there's Arnold, you know. Get to the chopper! Come on! Put the cookie down! Yeah. Voices. I'm funny like that.
Can you do each one of your films that you're going to mention, can you do an impression first so the listeners can try and guess?
I could give it a go. Well, hello, everyone.
Hi.
That's an intro. Well, that's an intro. Anyway, so we did our worst of 2022, as it's now 2023, and now we're doing the best because we can't all be pessimistic. Got to be positive and look back at what we enjoyed and what we like, because
we hated everything.
Yeah, even if life is terrible and everything, there's still got to be some bright spots, and that's film for me and TV for you.
Yeah.
So, here's what we enjoyed. We're going to start with some honorable mentions. So, Ollie was going to start. You have one, don't you?
I have one honorable mention. You know what? I'm going to mention a second one that didn't come out in this year. Didn't come out in 2022, but I have watched seasons 1 through 3 in 2022. That's Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek.
It's so beyond what I would usually watch. It's one of my mum's favorite shows. I watched The OC, which is another one of her favorite shows, a few years ago with her. Did not like it at all. Part of my Christmas present to her last Christmas was that I would watch Dawson's Creek with her. And I was very reluctant. And somehow, the pilot, I think, is one of the best pilots I've ever seen. It's essentially... So it's by... I can't remember to what
was
extent...
Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, it's Kevin Williamson. I can't remember what specifically he wrote and what he produced. But he's the main showrunner who also did Scream. And it has the same... Because Scream is about a bunch of teens who know horror, then going through a horror movie. Dawson's Creek is teens who know teen dramas, going through a teen drama. So, like, I can appreciate it on the level of it's Scream, but in a different genre.
Fair enough.
So, because I tend towards sci-fi, horror, fantasy, not much else. Whenever I do enjoy something outside of that, I tend to really like it. Like Friends, because I don't really like comedy, but then Friends is an exception of a comedy that I really love. And Dawson's Creek, I don't know how it's... I wouldn't say one of my favorite shows, but I am really enjoying it so far. I watched seasons 1 through 3, then Netflix got rid of it, and so... just bought the box set for my mom for this Christmas, so I'm gonna finish it. I have problems with it here and there. I can't think of any particular problems actually now that I think about it. It's been because I did watch the first 3 seasons towards the very beginning of the year, so I'm trying to think back. I was not planning on talking about this, but overall I really like the characters and I think it's a well-written, unique show for it being so self-aware. That's my opinion on Dawson's Creek, of what I've seen thus far of it. Stay for the best and worst of 2023, see how I feel about seasons 4 through 6, I guess.
We shall see.
But my actual, I guess, honorable mention that came out this year is The Flash Season 8. There's a lot of late seasons in this list because the Flash is a show... I mentioned the Arrowverse a couple of episodes ago that it can fluctuate a lot in quality. It can get really bad and then really good. The Flash is one such example. It went really downhill. Season 6 was, it can't possibly get any worse. Now Season 7 was worse. Season 8 somehow pulled it back because the series went for a while through struggling with having so many characters that it would have to just not have a character in the episode. And so every episode they'd have to come up with some contrived reason that characters were missing. And so you just then didn't get fulfilling character development with people. And there was a lot of, part of the initial love of the show is it's a lot of, there's a lot of crazy science that whether or not it makes sense necessarily by real world theories, because it goes a lot into time travel, but it had its own consistent lore that it became very muddled and it became very plot holy, kind of my problems with Stephen Moffat era of Doctor Who later on. But season 8 is back on form, really. I'm a couple of episodes away from finishing it, and I've just found out that the next season comes out in a few months is going to be the last.
All right.
Yes, I'm just, it's not a, I wouldn't, season 8 is not, oh my god, I love the show. Or, well, I do, I guess, for, I really enjoy the show, but it's not a best of 2022 per se, but it's a, I'm glad that it's something I'm back to enjoying as opposed to hating.
Oh, that's good. Now to get onto my honorable mentions. I got quite a few honorable mentions. Okay. Quite a lot.
Okay.
So, TV wise, because I'm probably going to put all my TV ones on the honorable mentions, because I didn't really have to talk about them that much. Cabinet of Curiosities.
I know of it.
So, yeah, Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, where it's an anthology horror show based on stories that he's written and other people have written, and he's got a bunch of different directors to make a different episode, and it's great. And overall, I liked it. A lot of episodes are better than others. So there's David Pryor's episode called The Autopsy. That one's a good one. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Kent's episode, The Murmuring, is a really good episode. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the episodes are kind of a bit underwhelming, like Panos Cosmatos, the guy who made Mandy, his episode called The Viewing. And that one, I think, problem with it is that it goes all kind of like horror at the end, but for the most part, it's just a conversation that people are just having, and I just thought it was a bit underwhelming. But it's weird the cast down here, like Peter Weller and Eric Andre.
Right.
So yeah, it's a weird cast, but like, it's a good overall. It's a great thing that I think I'd love to see more of. I'd like to see more.
Yeah,
directed. I know that's an episode. There's an episode about I think Anna Lily Amore. I think the director's name is. She did one about, I can't remember what it was called. The Outside. I think it's The Outside. And that was a very good episode as well. So there's like three really standout episodes. The rest of it, you know, they're good, but like they're not as good as other ones. But
right.
Overall, yeah, I that show's just it's a concept I love, that they're giving like sort of somewhat known directors or acclaimed directors that like that Del Toro loves, and giving them something to make in this sort of anthology sort of series.
Yeah.
It's a great concept that I love. I loved like just checking all the episodes out and everything. And I also love Jennifer Kent, so I was really looking for, and the fact that hers is the last episode, and it also reunites her with Essie Davis, who was the lead in The Babadook, which they both made.
Yeah.
That was great. She was also with Andrew Lincoln in it.
Nice.
Which was a good addition. And that's probably the best episode. But so that's good. That's what on that list. What else have I got? I Think You Should Leave, I think, had a series. I love that show. I think that's hilarious. That's just a little quick one to put in there. Mm-hmm. The Boys, Series 3. I love that show. The fact that show keeps going and still makes the political points. And you know, I just love that show. It's the most important superhero narrative going. I think I've said, like, you know, get rid of the MCU, get rid of the DCU, even though that means nothing. Just keep The Boys. It's just the best superhero property going right now, and I just can't wait for the next series. That's all my TV ones. Now for film, I want to add a film that I saw the other day that came out in I saw it in 2023, but it came out in 2022, and I don't know if it's on my worst or my best list.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I liked it or if I didn't like it, and that is Noah Baumbach's White Noise.
Right.
I don't know if I liked it or not. It's such a weird, weird movie. Like, mm-hmm. I think I was watching it, I'm like, this film feels like it's got, like, ADHD. Like, this, it's just tonally shifting all over the place.
Yeah.
People were just saying things, like, it feels like it feels the need to always be saying things. And just, like, the things don't even have to make sense. It's just, everyone's always talking about random shit all the time. And it's just so all over the, like... So it stars like Adam Driver and Greta Gerwig, and it's like they're like this suburban family, and it has that Noah Baumbach way of talking where no one really talks like real people. They talk
like
Noah Baumbach, I guess, how he thinks.
Yeah,
and everybody talks in a way that no human being talks. Like, and I found it really weird, hard to kind of get into these characters and stuff because they didn't feel real to me.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I was just sort of always gripped by what was going on, because it kept doing it, like, so it would take a horror direction, then it would take a comedy direction, then it would take like a whimsical adventure direction, then an action movie direction, like a crime thriller. It would just kept just going all over the place. But like, it's based on like a book that apparently was deemed to be called unfilmable, so I guess it makes sense that the film's all over the place, because maybe the book is. But it's like, it's basically just like a film all about a fearing death. And how, I guess, we create our own problems, stuff like mm-hmm. that. And it's what the whole film's about. So I got it at the end of the movie. But, like, throughout the whole film, I'm like, what is this film? It's just, like, all the horror was really out of left field. Like, it just didn't fit at all. Like, the tonal shifts were just so jarring
mm-hmm.
that it just didn't make any sense. Didn't fit into the narrative, like, at all, or the way he did it. Also, because Noah Baumbach doesn't do horror films.
Yeah.
So when it did something that was horror related, I was like, what the hell is this doing? What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't know if I liked it or if I didn't, but I wanted to mention it because I just don't know. It was just such a fucking weird movie. But it's definitely worth like checking out. But my God, what even was that film? I don't even know. But other films that I put, the actual ones I jotted down, Jackass Forever.
Right.
It's like... You know, growing up, I watched the Jackass movies. Never saw the series, but I watched the film series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just friends doing dumb stuff and just getting themselves hurt and all that stuff. But what I think was nice about Jackass Forever is that, one, it showed they hadn't lost their edge.
Mm-hmm.
They're still doing dumb stuff that they're doing with their kids. But there's a little bit more to this one because it was like... It's like still keeping in touch with people and like through all these years and
mm-hmm.
getting back to you being a friend. So it's like an actual nice sort of like uplifting little message to this film, which is what was like nice to see. Also, like I went to going to the cinema. It's the most sort of like interactive experience you'll have. Like you'll be like genuinely like wincing, covering your eyes and stuff like that because of the stuff they do in this film.
Yeah.
And it doesn't pull any punches and everything. Like it's still hardcore, and it's even still the juvenile nature of what they're doing is still just really funny. I don't know why. It just doesn't, it's just because of how outlandish it's gotten, because they now got, you know, Jackass is now this long established franchise and has made a lot of money, and they have a lot of money to burn
mm-hmm.
in this movie, which they do, and they bring in some new blood to sort of like do so because, you know, like the older guys can't necessarily do everything or like that much mm-hmm. or like, because they probably like, I don't know, throw their back out or something,
right?
But they're like, but they still do it, like, you know, Johnny Knoxville still does some stunts, Steve-O and all that, all the old guys, but they bring in some new guys so they can kind of keep the ball rolling and keep doing
mm-hmm.
a bunch of hardcore stunts. They also did Netflix had, I think, Jackass 4.5
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that as well. That was also pretty good. I think it was a bit more of interviews with Spike Jonze and Jeff Tremaine and Johnny Knoxville and Steve-O and all the guys like talking about like making it again and coming back to it after like 10 years and all that sort of stuff. So that was pretty nice to see how, like, although, you know, they've grown as people, they haven't changed who they are in a way, mm-hmm. and they still kept in touch with their friends. It's a weirdly sweet nature to Jackass Forever that mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting, and it was a fun time at the cinema. So Jackass Forever, Smile,
right?
See, I don't know,
good then.
I liked it.
And it was so marketed, and again, I was skeptical as to whether it would actually be good, but
I liked it. I think I probably should put Jackass Forever above it, but like this is just honorable mentions. I'm just saying this as I wrote them. Smile, it was good. I think I had a bit of problem with it being its message is a little bit simplified due to its a bit more of a blockbuster status the film has.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did like the film. What did have some effectively creepy moments. I did feel engaged in the movie. It was very interesting to me. It was almost great though, because I feel like if it was more independent and could have done a bit and gone down different narrative paths, it would have been good. I saw the short film that the director Parker Finn made. It was called like Lucy Can't Sleep or something like that.
Right,
and that's pretty cool. That was that's a pretty cool short film, and I can see where that became Smile. But like, I like how it's one of those doing that horror thing of like where the horror is sort of saying something, and that's cool to see in a bit more of a studio horror movie.
Yeah,
and as far as studio horror movies go, this is good. You know, because studio horrors are normally really shit. Anything like that, like the standard for a studio horror is quite low, and this one exceeds that bar. It doesn't go. I think it's not one of my. I think I've seen better horror movies in 2022.
Yeah.
So it's an honorable mention though, because I appreciated what it was doing. It didn't really, the studio stuff kind of held it back, but overall it is a good film.
Yeah.
It isn't reinventing the wheel, but it's painting it a nice color, So Smile. Bullet Train. Yeah. I enjoyed this film. I enjoyed Bullet Train. It was it's everything you want from a summer blockbuster,
right?
If I'm going to see a summer blockbuster, an action flick sort of thing, it's from the director of Deadpool 2 and an uncredited director of John Wick,
right?
And everything. So he's I think he did one of the Fast and Furious movies as well. I think he did Hobbs and Shaw. That was it. But so it's not the best thing. Filmography, but this film, it was like a fun thing of like a bunch of assassins on a train and it's just like the way it was just so much fun. It's just a fun movie. I think the highlight of the film was Brian Tyree Henry and Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played like these brothers, called Lemon and Tangerine, and it was just a film that had a lot of fun with what it was doing, and the film was having fun, and therefore I was having fun.
Right? Yeah.
It's not a movie that it's a popcorn action movie for the summertime. You're not expecting like class A narrative stuff and everything. It's just a fun film. What was good about it is that its fun was infectious.
Yeah.
The film was having fun with itself, and therefore it was having fun, so I was having fun. So as simple as that's what I want from a summer blockbuster film. It's just some escapism fun. That's all it was. So with some nice character like bonds that were surprisingly endearing, and overall, and it has some nice twists and turns and throughout the movie, and just how it does things is pretty interesting. I just thought it was just a fun ride, and just what you want from that kind of film. Then I have The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Right.
Yeah. The Nick Cage film about Nick Cage. And it's just Nick Cage all over. it's good, though. That's the thing. Is like, it's a film that knows what it is. Right. It knows, because Nick Cage, he's nuts. And he has that whole thing of being he's crazy off the wall, nuts and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And the film is that. It has some. It could be nuttier, maybe. It maybe doesn't go full Cage, but it goes Cage enough for it to be, to work as a Nick Cage movie. It's a fun concept. Pedro Pascal was a good. Like his character and Nick Cage as a Bond is really quite endearing. The way it comments on Nicolas Cage's the meta-ness of him commenting on his filmography and his how he perceives films and stuff was actually as someone who likes films and stuff was quite funny to me. It's just like it's as someone who likes it's like a comedy for people who like films or like at least like know Nicolas Cage and his movies and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So I you know it was what I expected.
Yeah.
It met my expectations, and that's all I could really ask for with a film like that. So it's on my honorable mentions. The Black Phone. So, you know, that was it's a solid horror little sort of in the kind of like post it kind of craze now.
Yeah.
Of like horror movies having like, you know, the whole Stranger Things and It kind of making like kind of, you know, kids in suburban America kind of. In like a bit of the past sort of thing, like horror kind of going. It just fits into that mold. I think it's based on a Joe Hill book, so like Stephen King's son.
Yeah,
and it's a solid movie. Although I think it's well directed. It's pretty, you know, kind of scary throughout. I think it's an interesting concept that's executed quite well. It's just, I think it kind of goes a little bit, maybe like action-y movie near its close and has a couple of moments that maybe aren't a little bit jarring. Like it's a comedic character, and I guess even Hawke's character, I don't know if it's... He's scary and menacing, but I don't know if it was... I don't know. But either way... The film was, I think, a pleasant. It's a nice horror, like kind of a sort of nice, like kind of blockbustery horror movie kind of thing. It's not not the best I've seen all year, but it was still a solid, you know, thing for horror fans. And I think I didn't like it as much as I think everyone else did, but it's still one of the better films I've seen in the year. All right, yeah, Prey. This is my last honorable mention. Prey. I haven't seen many Predator movies. I've only seen the original Predator, and I haven't now seen this one. Prey is just a solid sort of survival action movie kind of thing. The tribal setting is... I think it's just a really... has a nice little character arc for its protagonist. It kind of... it sets... So, the setting is quite nice because of, like, it's so much... It's a prequel that's so much in the past that... you're still kind of invested into what happens because it's not going to be like tied directly into the first movie or something like that. It's so you're intrigued to see like what's going to happen and, you know, cause like this predator could be a different predator or because you know, we've seen there's been predators and all that sort of stuff. We don't know if like the predator you see in this film is going to be the same predator in the first film. So there's always that, yeah, is everybody, all the humans going to die or is the predator going to get killed or, you know, it's still, works on its own. I think it's directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who made 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is a movie I loved a lot, despite its super forced ending, which I hate, but I love the rest of the movie so much that I forgive it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but he's made Prey and proved that, yeah, he's a great, continuing his streak of being a great sort of like action thriller filmmaker. It's just a solid, like survival action film. Like the action is pretty cool. It's pretty gory. The lead performance is great. The arc is, you know, just satisfying. Mm-hmm. Just a satisfying film, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it quite late into the year, so I didn't just jump onto the craze when it came out on like Disney Plus. But finally got around to seeing it, and yeah, I get it. You know, I've only seen, I guess, the Predator movies that have widely been critically acclaimed, and I can see why. It's just a solid film. So yeah, that's my honorable mentions. So you want to go into your...
My top 10.
Top 10.
I've So the first one I'll talk about, since it was already mentioned last episode in your worst, is the Batman. I liked the Batman. I think it... I also mentioned the Invitation on my worst list, as I mentioned I like gothic horror. Or gothic, I suppose, as a style. The Batman is very gothic. Dark Knight trilogy aside, that all Batman media does really well with creating Gotham and having a gothic sense. Like, the show Gotham is so not well written, but it's one of my it's the hardest to get through shows with how much the writing frustrates me. But the performances are great, and the way Gotham is depicted is really good. Same for the Batman. I really like the people talk about it as the emo Batman, and he does the character of Bruce Wayne does have the emo aesthetic as well, but it has the vibe of a lone vampire in a castle kind of character, and I like that kind of character, I suppose. So it's a film that's more tailored to me in a way. But yeah, I mentioned last time I worried when I saw it was, which I don't know why, but when I saw it was 3 hours, part of me is like, it's this long. Which I think the worry with that is always just if it's a film that I don't like, then it's just such like the second Hobbit film and Godzilla 2015 are the two examples I always go to for films that I just could not wait for them to end in the cinema because they were long and I didn't like them. So it's just, it's painful. Whereas the Batman I did enjoy, and I didn't really feel the runtime at any point. It is slow, and it could probably be shorter than it is, with like how long, like the iconic shot of them coming out of the darkness towards the beginning. That's such a long shot. He does not need to be walking that slowly. But it's not something that bothered me. The main thing that the film does well is the Riddler as a villain. It's very Seven-esque, and I think succeeds on for similar reasons. Really, it's just a genuinely creepy serial killer, and the investigative elements are compelling.
I mean, I just thought it was a bit bloated and a bit boring.
I just
need to see it again.
I can understand it. It is slow. I'd be interested in seeing another Batman, like a sequel, I guess. I really hope it doesn't focus on the joke. I did not like that joke scene at the end. It was, like I mentioned last time, it was very... the film was going by a certain
tacked
tone.
On for fans.
Yeah, it was completely tacked on. And also, the Joker is such a hard character to do in a way that you can't just throw a scene like that in. I just didn't like it. I mean, maybe if that character were the star villain, I'd end up liking them more. But in that scene, I was not sold. So, yeah. Wish that scene hadn't existed, but the rest of the film I really liked.
Yeah, and then people were like, when they had that deleted scene where he actually talks to the Joker, and I'm a little bit like, that's even worse because if they had kept that in, because it's like, then yeah, you just can't do a movie without the Joker. You always got to fall back onto the Joker.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt, because I thought the Riddler was actually really, I thought the Riddler was, the way they did the Riddler was really strong, and I was really, the menace of like the serial killer thing of the Riddler, it was actually like they actually did the Riddler and made him scary, which was actually really cool, and that's the one thing I think I did like about the film. I just wish they'd committed a bit more to it.
Yeah,
that's my thing with it. Yeah.
I mean, 10. I also like the film kind of with its message or whatever. By the end, it has it feels like it's commenting on. Because obviously it's going by Batman as a symbol of vigilantism or of vengeance rather, and then in the end it makes a more of a point about they should resemble more of hope and all that. So in a way it sort of deconstructs its own emo-ness and says Batman doesn't need to be this gritty and dark.
Fair enough.
Which I sort of thought was interesting, but yeah. Next on my list,
number nine.
It's just to destroy my credibility, but I have to mention it. Just again, this is the best of in terms of my enjoyment levels. Okay. So I'm a middle-aged woman and I enjoy Neighbours as a TV show.
Okay.
This was the end of Neighbours.
Oh, yes, it was. Well, not the actual end of Neighbours.
Because it has since been revived.
Revived, yes.
By Amazon. Well, it hasn't yet, but will be. I've been watching Neighbours since 2013. It's had some ups and had some downs. It's the only soap opera I watch. And
fair enough.
You know, usually it has all the problems of a soap opera or whatever. But this year, I think because they knew it was their last, they really upped. There's certain things, events or whatever, feel more cinematic. There's a lot of a lot more. The kind of melodrama that makes a soap opera, if you're a kind of soap opera viewer, good. Like, because usually every year or so in at least in Neighbours, I can't speak for other soap operas, there's a dramatic event like the school fire or the something blows up or whatever, and then the character will die, and it's the highlight of my year because I love character death. It's all very dramatic. but with this last year of Neighbours, it was like one a month. I teared up at points. It was good. It's good quality melodrama. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to say soap opera's best of the year or anything. I know it's soap opera, but I enjoy it. And
you just enjoy Neighbours.
It was
man.
A very very strong series for it, or era. I don't know what you call it. A year of it.
Yeah, a strong year. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ongoing, isn't it? So yeah, number eight.
Next on my list is a film I'm guessing you haven't seen, because I feel like if you had, it would probably be on your worst list. Avatar: The Way of Water.
I haven't seen it, and my reason for not seeing it is because it's going to be in the cinema for a long time, so I'm in no rush to see it. I'm not a huge fan of the first one. I mean, it's fine. Again, it's just a fine. I don't like the whole basic story, but amazing visuals that James Cameron seems to be like all about right now. But I'll probably check it out at some point, but like I got so much time to do it, you know.
I understand that he's James Cameron is committing
3 hours as well.
James Cameron is committing to a simple story, great visuals, which this film has, and I can understand being against that because he is capable of more than that in a way. I don't think the first film is too basic. I think the first one was better than this one. I really enjoy it. I think I dislike the whole, it's just Pocahontas or it's just Dance with Wolves, because there are so many films that do that same story and people don't moan that Pocahontas is just Dancing with Wolves or one of any other films. People only moan about Avatar. I don't get it. I think it's just because it's the highest grossing film, but
pretty much.
But I think it's a good film that stands on its own within that archetypal story. I think it does it quite well, and as a cinema experience, I think it's beautiful. At one point, way back when, that was one of my favorite films. I think it was Aliens, Cabin in the Woods, and Avatar back in 2012 or so when I watched those films. So Avatar: The Way of Water, I have more to complain about it actually. Because it's easier to complain than it is to praise. But
fun.
I mean, the visuals are still great. Side note, there's a the original script for the film is being turned into a graphic novel. So I'm going to get that at some point. It's currently released in 3 volumes for £15 each, and I'm not paying that much, but they're releasing a all-in-one version in May, so I'll get that when it comes out, because I'm really interested in like a between story of, because it's a whole family dynamic now, 14 years I think on. So I'm interested in an in-between thing. The things the film does well and not well, it has a lot of characters, so on one hand, I like all of the characters. On the other hand, it could do more with some of them. Like, there are some ideas that are present with the sister in the film, played by Sigourney Weaver, because it's Sigourney Weaver's character's kid, essentially, who is also played by Sigourney Weaver because it's motion capture, so you can do that. Which isn't as weird as I thought it would be. But they present a certain idea and then barely do anything with it. And this is going to be at least two film, maybe four, if the next one goes well, franchise. So you can always use the excuse, well, they'll develop it in the next one. But I still feel like if you introduce the concept in this one, they should have done more than they did with it.
Fair enough.
It's for the length of time you have in this film. And I enjoy it throughout. I don't want it to be a shorter film, but if it is this long, I would like them to play more with the concepts they have. The core, I mean, it doesn't focus on Jake Sully that much. It focuses a lot more on the kids. And there's like a little bullying story and stuff. The main stuff that the kids are going through, I think it does that stuff quite well. It's kind of just like a teens having teen problems in the middle of this brutal environment. In a way, I guess it's less generic, I suppose. It has a more interesting, more unique story in a way. But I think the first film is more concise and is telling a more clearer story.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so I like the characters. I like some of what they're going through, but certain characters, they introduce certain ideas and then don't explore it fully. There's also the character of the villain's son. So the villain from the first film, who was revived as an Avatar clone in this film.
Oh, lovely.
The setup for the film is very like, why are you just doing the same thing again? I do like where they end up going with it. It reminds me of Alien Resurrection. That film shouldn't exist, and they contrived about how the film begins, and yet the whole clone idea that they play with in that film, that ends up being the best bit of that film because they do something interesting with it. The clone thing is stupid. It's so like childish if you like care about that, but it's I just like disregarded it and was like, okay, sure, I'm on board, sure, go with it. Cool. And
so why is it one of your best of the year?
Because I haven't seen that much.
Fair enough.
No, I'm just committed to the Avatar franchise. The fact that the first film is so hated just makes me like it more. I think just the first film was it's the most wow experience I've had at the cinema, just the way they present that world. And the thought is not just the visuals as well, it's the thought that goes in that went into how all of these creatures would work. They created a whole Na'vi language.
They did, yeah.
Like I have a lot of, because I love world building in general. Like I love crazy fantastical space opera, all these various worlds. I play and love D&D, so Avatar is like a, I guess masterclass isn't the right word, but it's like a wonderful world. For originally what was just one 2009 film, they put a needless amount of work into creating that world, and so I like that it's being explored further here. Yeah, it's not that. I guess it's on a similar level to what you said about like, it's not the deepest thing in the world. It's like a blockbuster kind of thing, but it's a film that very much appeals to me because of the world and because I'm a contrarian.
Fair enough. So that's number eight.
That's number eight.
Number seven.
I'm getting a call. Sorry. Number seven is Harley Quinn season 3.
Harley Quinn.
This is a show that's actually pretty good. This isn't just something that personally appeals to me, like Neighbors or Avatar. Harley Quinn. I think I briefly mentioned this in a previous episode. I don't like adult cartoons generally. I think they seem to focus too much on. They have dislikable characters, which is not a problem in itself. It's just something I can't get on board with. and it seems, and the comedy seems to be like reveling in how dislikable they are, whereas I'm just there like, this is just, this, they're just being a dick and I'm not into it. Also, the whole a lot of the adult cartoons seem to be like, we are saying sex and we're animated, lol, or we're blood and we're animated, lol, and it's just kind of childish. Harley Quinn, though, is a character. They give the character, I think I did mention this in a previous episode, the first season focuses basically on what the emancipation of Harley Quinn should have focused on or claimed to focus about, but didn't. So the first episode or whatever is her breaking up with Joker, and so it's her dealing with an abusive relationship, and it does all of this really interesting. I suppose I mentioned She-Hulk last time. This is a series that does a lot of really good gender commentary and political commentary, as well as showing some. The character of Harley Quinn can be dislikable, but then develops, and I think it just deals with her character very well. Also, is just very funny as a Batman property. Like, I recommend it for people who are into Batman because it finds the funny thing about every character in the Batman universe. Like, Bane is this petty guy who wants to blow stuff up, or Clayface. Like, they looked at the concept of Clayface as being somebody who was an actor, and then he became a clay person, and then can, you know, like, it's whatever. It's a stupid comic concept. And then they turned it into a guy who's like this overdramatic thespian person. And it's just funny. They get the funny. They find what's funny about all of these concepts, and the voice actors are so the voice actors are so good for everyone as well. They have what's her name from Big Bang Theory? Kaylee Cuoco. But they who is just good. But they also get a bunch of great comedy people like Alan Tudyk or Tudyk, I don't know. From Clayface among of other characters from he's also in Firefly, but Disney also hires him. I think he's the chicken in Moana. They always hire him for small animal roles, which I don't really get, but sure.
He's a voice actor, chameleonic kind of actor.
Yeah,
seems to be his thing. Yeah,
but he does this character of Clayface incredibly well. The character of Poison Ivy in the show is really, really good, really well developed as well. Matt Oberg as Kite Man, which is great. Lots of great characterization, both on a humor level and on a genuinely deep character level.
Nice.
So, and season 3 is going strong, so happy with that. Nice. My number six on the list is Moon Knight.
All right, I have not seen Moon Knight.
It is it's good, yeah. I really like Phase 5 of Marvel. Mainly because there's a lot of TV, and the TV shows can obviously have the time to develop the characters. I suppose hard show to talk about without spoiling again, but the first episode is about this ordinary guy who's having blackouts and then appearing in strange situations, like action scenarios, like where he's just robbed something or something, and then you're like trying to figure out what's going on. So initially there is a bit of intentional, okay, what's going on here? But by the second episode, you sort of have a grasp on it. And I still had some questions, like I had some lingering points where I was like, that doesn't really make sense, or I'm not so sure. But then by, I think it was episode 4 or 5, they explain some of those points in a way that's like, oh my god, I'm really glad they did it that way. I don't want to go into it too much because spoilers, but I think the character is developed really nicely from what could have been a lot messier. Like, the concept was hard to do with a split personality kind of character, because he sort of has two characters and it flip-flops between the episodes with which one it focuses on.
That's cool,
which was a bit jarring at first to get used to, but the way they end up doing it is really good.
I'm tempted to watch it, because I know that Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead directed some episodes, and I love them. So yeah, I should probably check it out at some point. Also, Ethan Hawke and Oscar Isaac. So
yeah, yeah. I do have a problem, which I cannot discuss without getting into spoilers. But there, it feels like every Marvel show does something towards the end where it's like you, because it's trying to set up for the future or bundling it, then makes a decision that isn't within the investment of the character arc or whatever, and it's just like, you almost had me.
You got a universe to create, bruh.
But that aside, it explores the character really nicely, and I also just like ancient Egypt as a point in history, so the fact that it focuses partly on that is nice. So yeah, solid number five, six rather.
So that's number six. So my 10 to 6.
Yes.
Right? My 10 to 6. All right. Am I doing the voices thing?
If you want. You don't have to.
Number 10? Anyway. Let's see what happens. Number 10.
Is it a Scooby-Doo thing?
Yeah, I was trying, but it doesn't always
come. No. I got that. I was just saying, is your number 10 a Scooby-Doo
No.
film? Oh. I'll send you an impression of, like, the film.
Oh, no. I can't do that. Okay. No, I can't, because they're not really voices in these things. I just want to just do a voice. Anyway, number 10, I spoke about it on the last episode of the worst films, because it was one of Ollie's worst, but I love it, and that is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Right.
As we were saying, you know, it's... I hadn't seen WandaVision, so the film worked for me. But I mostly just love the fact that Sam Raimi's back directing stuff. He's one of my favorite directors, and he's one of the reasons I'm actually even pursuing film as a career. So
yeah,
it's just great to see him not only just come back to filmmaking, but to kind of merge the two genres that he's mastered throughout his career with horror and superheroes. In that Doctor Strange has got enough kind of horror stuff in it, which is surprising, you know, surprisingly violent, sort of thrilling thing for the whole time. I like the horror angle it took. You know, I love, you know, Bruce Campbell making a cameo, which is always lovely. So, because, you know,
I didn't like the cameo though. It's just for the fact.
I wish he had a different role, but still, just to see Bruce Campbell in an MCU film is great.
Yeah, sure.
I just love Bruce Campbell, man. You know, he's Ash Williams. He's always going to be one of my favorite characters in, like, horror and in just film. I just love Ash Williams. I love Bruce Campbell for it.
Mm.
He's always got a soft spot for him. Sam Raimi being back to filmmaking, you know, simple as. I just enjoyed it. I have a bit of a personal bias, but, you know, it was an enjoyable movie. I loved it, you know. But, like, yeah, that's why it's on number 10, though.
Fair enough.
So then number 9,
mm-hmm.
I'll probably stop the voice. I can't. I can't do any voices here. Number 9 is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Interesting.
See, I liked the film a lot. It was like, considering that there's another Pinocchio movie that people didn't like. I didn't see it because I don't like the Disney remake, the uninspired nature of their remake system. Yeah. Let's do a live action remake so we can keep the copyright, because Disney's all about copyright.
Completely agree.
And it stars, that one stars Tom Hanks and Robert Zemeckis makes it, and the fact it's bad is a bit like, how? You know, you guys have, every time you guys team up, it ends up being great, but apparently not this time. But the Guillermo del Toro's one just really like inspired in the way that it was sort of made. It's got darker elements to it, but it's also still kind of a safer kids kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has like great use of motifs, great use of of its themes. Voice cast is great with Ewan McGregor, David Bradley, who plays Geppetto, which was nice to see him get a role. If you don't know who he is, he plays, like, was it Finch in Harry Potter, the groundskeeper?
Finch in Harry Potter, and I can't remember the character's name in Game of Thrones, and The Strain, very good in that.
Yeah, he plays Geppetto in this, and so he's good. It's good to see him get a a role in a bit of more of a lead one. But it's just a sort of sweet movie. Christoph Waltz is a good as like the sort of villain it as like the sort of kind of villain in it kind of thing. I think Finn Wolfhard's in it. Ron Perlman's in it also as a villain. It's just got a great voice cast. I like the art style. It's like a nice little. It's like a gothic style that I think a lot of people go like, "Oh, it looks like Tim Burton," and I'm like, "Yeah, I get what you mean." You know, it is of that kind of is a kind of gothic animation, that sort of claymation that kind of fits in that kind of Nightmare Before Christmas, Frankenweenie thing. But that's very much Tim Burton style. This looks very much Guillermo del Toro style.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a sweet movie. It's a really nice, sweet movie that uses its that's really well made. It's got its use of like themes and motifs throughout the film is just really good. It's visually stunning. It's just a lovely movie, you know. I just enjoyed watching it. It's just a great, great little kids movie. It probably will win the Oscar for animated film. Maybe I don't know. I hope it does. It's a really nice movie. So that's my number 9. Number 8 is Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery.
Yes, haven't yet seen it. I probably will. I don't understand. I mean, I enjoyed Knives Out. I don't know why people made such a huge hype over it. It was a good film.
That is the thing about it.
Like, it wasn't like level of Don't Breathe where I thought it's okay at best. Like, I enjoyed Knives Out. It's a good, solid film, but it's not revolutionary. I didn't understand the super hype for it.
Yeah, that's the thing about this, that it's very much kind of on par with Knives Out,
right?
In that I think they're both kind of equal quality. Mm-hmm. I think this one has clearly got a much bigger budget and it is not afraid to flaunt that,
right?
You know, it is so most of it is all basically set on this sort of rich billionaire's island that he calls the Glass Onion,
right?
And the thing is about this movie is very similar to Knives Out, is that it's like, for a mystery, it's not complex.
Right.
Really. Or it is complex, but it's not like, it takes a thing of like whereas I think the first one was better because it followed Ana de Armas' character.
Yeah.
And made her the protagonist and sort of, it kept you in her shoes and not Benoit Blanc's. This one, you're kind of firmly with Benoit Blanc.
Right.
And, again, it's still not necessarily his movie. He is kind of a supporting figure in this film. It is mostly Janelle Monáe's film.
Mm-hmm.
in this one. And, you know, as far as like mysteries go, it's not like groundbreaking or like, you know, it's like the first one. Like it's sort of like taking a mystery and, you know, having some nice twists and turns throughout the film, which is where it is at its most exciting. It's reveals at the end of like the whodunit is not groundbreaking and is always kind of a bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
Same with like Knives Out kind of thing, because it's a bit, but it's how it handles that in quite a satisfying way. It takes a kind of unremarkable reveal, but does it in a way that's still somewhat satisfying, even if the reveal's just kind of like, well, yeah, obviously, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another solid movie, you mm-hmm. know? It's just, he's just made a sequel that's kind of that's kind of quite similar in some regards, like in the sense of like some of the same problems with Knives Out, like it's a underwhelming reveal, and it's not overly complex. And everything like that, but it's not so much in its destination, but in its journey that is what makes both Knives Out and Glass Onion both really good movies.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoy how it takes you on this journey of this mystery is what makes them such great films. If it was all about just the reveal, these films would be terrible. Both of them would be awful. But it's just, it takes you on this very nice and little journey throughout, and it's just another solid addition. I can't wait for the third one, really.
Cool.
Because it's, you know, it's a Netflix film. They bought it up.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid for two, so this is the first one. They got another one coming.
Cool.
So we'll see how that one goes. So that's my number 8. Number 7 is X.
Haven't seen it.
Ty West's X, which is a horror movie. I think it's an A24 horror movie, I think. And it's basically about, like, set in the 70s, where a bunch of, like, crew, these, like, this porn film crew rent out this house, where these old people have, like, these old people have, like, a house and then on their property, and they rent it out to shoot a porn film, but without their knowing.
Right.
And it just becomes a big old sort of kind of a bit of a slasher horror thing.
Cool.
And it's just a solid, like, quite thrilling horror outing. And it's weird. It gets weird. Like, it's sort of comments on, I guess, our attitudes towards sexuality, and it is pretty interesting because of, like, with both its antagonist and its protagonist. It's part of now a trilogy, I think, because they did a prequel called Pearl, which I really want to see but haven't seen yet, which focuses on the main antagonist of the film, but it's like a prequel and all that stuff, because she's an old lady. Surprisingly, the weird thing is she's also played by the protagonist, the main actress, Mia Goth. She plays the main character and the antagonists in this film, and you wouldn't know because it's just all of the, like, caked in old lady makeup.
Right.
And then they're doing a sequel called Maxine, which follows the protagonist of the film, Maxine. And I'm interested to see how this pans out. I've seen a couple of Ty West movies, like The House of the Devil, and I tried to watch The Innkeepers, but never finished it. I've never been a fan. I found his films to be a bit, like, sort of like lacking in frills and scares.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was thrilling, and, you know, kind of had quite adrenaline. It had a pulse to it, and it was just it's saying something. It's weird. It's wacky. It's, you know, gory, scary. It's, you know, it's what I look for in a kind of horror movie.
And, yeah,
yeah. It was weird because Jenna Ortega's in this film,
mm-hmm.
and this is where first thing I've seen her in.
She's getting about it here.
Yeah. It's the first time I saw her in something. And then I saw her on Wednesday. Wearing in mind that she plays this girl who's like this prudish sort of sound operator on the porn film that then eventually wants to be in a scene. So to have seen her from there to then go and see her play a 15-year-old girl was a bit jarring for me.
Yeah.
But it's got some nice surprises in it. It has a lot of cool foreshadowing throughout the film, which I didn't know until I saw, like, a video on it later on. I'm like, oh, that's actually really cool. It's a well kind of made horror film.
Right.
And I'm interested to see, like, the prequel and the sequel.
Cool.
So that's my number 7. Number 6 is a film that really surprised me this year, and it's on Disney Plus now, and I've, like, told my, like, I think I've recommended it to people. It's The Menu.
I don't think I've heard of that.
So it's directed by a guy called Mark? I think it's Mark Mylod.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, predominantly a TV director. He did episodes of, quite a few episodes of Succession, Game of Thrones, and Shameless.
Yeah.
And, but he also did, like, the Ali G movie. So he kind of, he does comedy and he does, like, serious dramas and stuff. And this film is kind of like a comedy thriller. And it's basically that there's the top sort of chef, like this guy is like a god of cooking kind of thing, has invited all these particular people to come to this island for an evening of dining,
right,
in which he's kind of put a narrative into the food sort of thing. And so it mostly follows Anya Taylor-Joy, who's this girl that is, whose boyfriend, but who's a massive food lover sort of thing, like massive, like, he knows, like, sort of like shitloads about food and all that stuff. He's like a massive fan of this guy, and he brings her along. She knows nothing about food sort of thing to this extravagant evening. The boyfriend's played by Nicholas Holt, and it's Anna Taylor-Joy, and the head chef is played by the chef that's brought them there is played by Ralph Fiennes, and his performance is phenomenal. Like, he doesn't have to do anything and he's threatening. But the whole thing is that when they get to that island, it realizes that his plan for the evening is a bit more sinister than they thought it would be. It's not just going to be a night of eating food. And it, what I loved about this film so much, I saw the trailers and I was not interested, mm-hmm. but I ended up seeing it. And what I loved about the film is it's a film that comments on art, and from an artist's perspective and as a consumer's perspective. It's all under the whole thing of cooking and using cooking as the example. But like, it's all about as consumers, we lose our appreciation of art. By right. just constant consumption, and yeah. and about artists losing the passion for their craft, so to please a larger audience, sort mm-hmm. of thing, and losing themselves in it. And it's the way it handles those themes that makes this film so gripping. Mm-hmm. It's kind of light on character development,
right?
You get a bit about. The only characters that get any sort of depth whatsoever is Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy, because mm-hmm. they are like the antagonist, protagonist of the film. And the way that their relationship unfolds throughout the film is very interesting and very, very gripping. But it's interesting just how this film is mostly just set in a kind of like, it's an open kitchen and like dining area. Yeah. It's just mostly set in one room. And it's the way it keeps this one room. It's always gripping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this film's really engaging start to finish. It's saying something at the same time. It's actually, it's funny, and it's also, it's tonal shifts from like comedy to like more sinister, like kind of horror thriller mm-hmm. Genres. It's really, it's like seamless. They work, they don't jar, they're not jarring at all. They just, they work. It's like, it's funny. It's suspenseful. It's just a really great movie. And I wasn't expecting it. So yeah, that's my number 6 of my best films of 2022.
My number 5 then is Miss Marvel, which falls on the line of is actually really good, as opposed to is one that I'm personally biased towards. Yeah, of Marvel, of I guess Phase 5, Marvel's Disney Plus shows, I would say it's the best. Probably. Let me think about that. I really enjoyed What If, so What If's the only is the contender for that, but Miss Marvel, it's 6 episodes. It's one I hadn't heard anything about, so I wasn't sure if it would fall in the same level of Hawkeye, wherein it was just okay, but really not very good at all. That's sort of what I was expecting, but it was really good. The main thing it does really well is the main character, but the main character's the family dynamic, which feels very real. And it's a Muslim family from, I think the parents moved from Pakistan, so it goes into a lot of that sort of cultural background. And it does it really interestingly. Because I really like watching things, I suppose, obviously within the like sci-fi horror like kind of genre. Like, I don't tend to watch dramas or films that are set, like even like I like LGBT representation, but I don't tend to watch quote-unquote gay films like the what was it you mentioned on your worst list? The Postman?
My Policeman,
yeah. The Postman. I don't tend to watch films like that, but within the genres that I watch, I love it when they explore things, other cultures and stuff. I think it did that really well. The plot, the superhero elements are basic enough. It's not like WandaVision kind of like groundbreaking in the like its story elements, mm-hmm. but the character and the family and that dynamic really really sells it. I don't think I've seen one I enjoyed that much since Lost in Space, which is Lost in Space, which I really enjoy for the family and that dynamic. Like, the plot elements are good or not good depending on the series or episode, but the characters and the family dynamic is really strong in that series, and same for Miss Marvel. So that's why that's number 5 here.
Nice.
Number 4 is The Walking Dead season 11. It's finally over.
Finally over.
The Walking Dead is a show that I started during, I think season 8 was about to air, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to start this long show that I've somehow not seen up until now. And fair I didn't enough. Really enjoy it at all. I'm somebody who continues with something regardless of whether I enjoy it, because it may eventually become good, and I'm a completionist. But I think it has the problem that zombie stories, the inevitable problem with zombie stories is that the character goal of survive is very uncompelling. Like, that's a passive goal, like, because it just, their characters are just reactionary. So the best zombie films are generally when you've got other human enemies or a human enemy or some other conflicts going on during the zombie apocalypse,
which is what Walking Dead does. Yeah,
which is what Walking Dead does, which is, well, no, it's when walking the periods of Walking Dead that I like are when it's doing that. So season one is fine, it's okay. Season two, it gets good towards the end when it starts doing that. Season three introduces a proper big bad. Have you seen any of Walking Dead?
Yes, I think I watched up to, I saw the introduction of Negan,
right,
and then I watched, I think, the next season.
So,
and
yeah,
I watched maybe seven seasons.
Yeah,
and I stopped after that seventh season, so, because that seventh season was bad.
Yeah,
also, you know, it got rid of probably my favorite character,
right? Season three introduces a proper big bang, which is why a lot of people refer to that kind of arc, or did at least a few years ago,
the governor,
as the best, because it introduced a proper goal for the characters to focus on. There's more of a story during that period. And then when that story arc ends, you've got characters fumbling around the woods for a season and a half, and it's so slow.
That's why I didn't like about series 7.
No, that's not even that series. Second half, series 4 through series 5 is the characters all being separated, and I don't know how the comic. Right. I don't, because it very closely follows the comics. I don't know how the comics does it, but it means.
Yeah, me neither.
Also, because I think it was in season 5 when it introduced another group of characters, it reached a point where there were so many characters that it really struggles. So by season 7, because the end of season 6 into season 7 does introduce another big band, so I was excited for that. But then it has real pacing issues, season 7 and especially season 8, which is such a slog to get through because it has so many characters, which it kind of needs to introduce them in season 7, because the premise is that you've got a villain who's controlling all these various communities, and so the plot demands that the characters go to these other communities and band together and all that. But that then means you're introducing a bunch of new characters, and so there are so many that it cannot balance them, and so you just won't see characters for several episodes, and it's the show developed real pacing issues. So I stopped towards the I binged the first 7 seasons, then stopped very early in season 8 because it was just too slow. I mean, part of it being slow might be that I was having to watch it as it was airing, but it was also, I think, just season 7 and 8 do have real pacing issues. I think it was about a year and a half later I made myself watch season 8, and I'm so glad I did, because seasons 9 through 11 are the best of the show by far. Because they've got a new showrunner with season 9. And this is another thing, I had to Google it, because I was like, am I the only one who thinks season 9 was such a jump up in quality? And I'm not the only one. I feel good. Justified. So it has a time jump, which I said last episode I do struggle with, because the first few episodes I deal with one thing, and then Rick, and then there's a shift in dynamic, and it jumps ahead 7 years or so. I struggle a little bit with that. But even before and after a little bit after the time jump where I was adjusting, it knows how to balance all the characters, and it made me realize, wait, there isn't actually a problem with having this many characters, because the show can do it. It just was really struggling for some reason beforehand. Also introduces another new villain, which it deals with through seasons 9 and 10, and way by far better than the rest of the villains as well. Because I'm the governor, I didn't actually particularly like as a character or care about. Though I appreciated them having the characters having somebody to work against, I don't think the actual character was written as well as they could have been. But so yes, I really enjoy seasons 9 and 10. Then season 11 has to deal with a couple of new villains, and so I was hoping it wasn't just the previous villain that had me, and no, indeed, it continues to be really well paced, and so yeah, it's the story it dealt with this year just did it well, did the new villains well, did the new characters well, and it ended in a way that I am satisfied, yes, as well, which is also rare for a, obviously for a show, especially if it goes on for 11 seasons, it's very rare that I did actually tally at one point of all of the shows that have had planned endings, how many of them I liked, and it was a third of them, third of the season of overall series finales that I enjoy. But yeah, this I can add this to the list. I think
I should probably get back to it
though. Yeah, I think, I mean, it's not a show that I would recommend anyone start because it's 8 seasons of stuff that I don't particularly love. But if you're already at the point of season 8, I would say try as hard as you can to push through that real slog, because season 9 is good, 10 better because it doesn't have a time jump, and 11 continues in good quality. Yeah, it balances the characters so well, and certain characters just hands with a lot of depth. I think The Walking Dead as a show at its height is really good. And I don't say at its height meaning a specific time, but I don't mean that as in a period of time so much as the things it does well, it does really well when it does them well. Because the premise of the comic even is this isn't a zombie story about people trying to fix the apocalypse, but just dealing with the new status quo and trying to learn what that means and debating all these themes of morality and such. And when it does those things well and explores these characters struggling with these themes, it does it really, really well. And I think the last 3 seasons are great examples of that.
That's cool.
So yeah, that's my number 4.
Number 4.
My number three is the last remaining, soon to be last remaining, when The Flash ends, Arrowverse show of Superman and Lois. I recommend people watch. It is in the Arrowverse, but hasn't crossed over so much or anything. It's very standalone.
Fair enough.
But so the rest of the Arrowverse is CW. And if you know CW, you know that sort of tone that they do. It's very like teen drama kind of
cheesy ass.
Yeah, which I enjoy, but it has that tone. Whereas Superman Lois is, I don't remember the specifics, but it's made by HBO or it's half made by HBO. I don't know, but it has that. It has a completely different level of production. Feels very cinematic and is so much more mature as a show, and like. No diss to the other Arrowverse shows because I love them, but the way it does relationships is more mature is the way to put it. Like, because the Arrowverse shows get a lot of flack from fans about the way they handle certain character with the romances. Like the main character romances can be very like forced relationship drama, and the love interest will make it. Well, I won't go into it, but yeah, it's just like childish, and characters make points for the sake of having an issue of the episode, which they then could solve very quickly if they just had a conversation, but they've got to drag it out and whatever. Superman and Lois, the main characters of Clark and Lois, it's a married couple who move back to Smallville, Clark's hometown, and with their twin boys, and are trying to have a normal life while other stuff is going on. And again, just the family dynamics really good. That it depicts so well a married couple who have disagreements but both have reasonable points. As in, one of them will be annoyed at the other for doing something or whatever, but you understand both sides. Like, it does. It's obviously, it's not a A24 drama or anything, but it's the way it depicts a married couple is really interesting and mature, and it's a show that I would recommend people who like superhero stuff watch. And it's all on iPlayer for those in the UK. I believe it's still on iPlayer because the BBC picked up here. I mean, the fact that the BBC picked up, I think, speaks to its difference in tone to the other generic superhero content. Yeah, season one was very good. I worried that season two wouldn't be as good, but it was, so that's nice. Number two on the list is another Arrowverse show. A show that ended this year. It's very sad. I am still a couple of episodes away from finishing, and I'm dragging it out as long as I can because I don't want it to finish. It's Legends of Tomorrow, which is a comedy superhero show that I've spoken about in my top five shows. It wasn't a top five show, but I think it was an honorable mention. But it's a show that started as the side characters from Arrow and Flash, not even main side characters, but just reoccurring characters that you've seen a few times, then going aboard a time ship to do this mission. It's kind of Guardians of the Galaxy-esque in its weird family dynamic.
Fair enough.
And it has about eight characters each season. There's a bit of rollover of characters leaving and new characters coming in. By this point of season seven, its nature of originally being this baby of Arrow and Flash changed, and it very much found its own footing.
Fair enough.
I mean, I suppose it's a hard show to recommend, unlike Superman Lois, because it is very much birthed by these other shows, but
does it work on its own, or is
it very? It does work on its own. I'm just thinking, like, because it, as in, if you start from season one, which I guess you need to, it's very the fact that it has these other characters from the other shows. I guess you may need a bit of context. It gives you the context, gives like a little background on these various characters. You probably could watch it on its own, but
fair enough.
The Arrowverse by nature is designed to be watched. Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl—they're like, they all interlink. Whereas,
fair enough.
Unlike Superman Lois, which is very much like Superman as a character had appeared in the Arrowverse before that point, but it doesn't cross over during. So it's not like you're ever confused watching Superman Lois if you haven't seen the other shows. But Legends of Tomorrow—it's a time travel show. I don't know how to. Because it has such a passionate fan base. It's such a...
one of your favorite things of the year? I don't know why it's good.
I don't know, because it's a comedy, kind of. And I don't know, how do you describe why something works as a comedy? It's not entirely
you
comedy.
You find it funny, simple as.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what to compare it to, because like, it has a Doctor Who kind of... like being a time travel fixing things, except it doesn't take itself remotely seriously. The rules do not matter. It's just having fun. These bunch of crazy characters. It's quite meta as a show. It's good. It's good. Good quality content. It's a very sad that it's finished.
Yeah.
I'm hoping there'll at least be some kind of special, or that Netflix will pick it up or something to finish it off. But probs not. But each season is fairly self-contained, so there's at least
just the end of a show that you love.
It's a sad end of a show. I mean, I'm a couple of episodes away from finishing, so I don't actually know if it ends on a cliffhanger. I mean, most seasons do end with like a little tease for next season, so that will be a shame if it ends on a major one. But
depends on whether or not it was cancelled or if it chose.
Well, it was cancelled because CW's come into new management, so so a bunch of them, everything's being cut off at the moment.
Damn it.
Titans is still going, though. That's not CW.
I think it's on Netflix.
It is. I was surprised when I found out that's still going. I haven't seen it, but I've heard not good things.
Yeah. I mean, I loved Teen Titans as a kid, but like the animated stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah. I loved the Teen Titans Go to the Movies. That
right,
was
yeah. I know.
I love that movie. Yeah. But I never watched Teen Titans Go.
Fair.
So that's your number two.
Number one, I've already discussed in its entirety in a previous episode. Scream 2022.
Scream.
It's good. 2022. Good content. Scream 5 / Scream. Going over what I've already said, but it's I love the way that every Scream film finds something new to comment on, with the first one commenting on horror movies, second one commenting on sequels, third one commenting on trilogies, fourth one commenting on reboots, and this one commenting on what it calls requels, which is this modern state of Hollywood rebooting something. That's why it calls itself Scream as opposed to Scream 5, because that'd be the Hollywood trend these days. Like Halloween in 2018, was it? Even though it's kind of
third time,
kind of Halloween been... three for the,
it's
whatever.
The third Halloween.
Yeah. But yeah, it has really good commentary on that. The new cast of characters are really likable, really interesting. It does have the legacy characters, and I don't know too much about the new one, but I hope we stay. I'd really rather we avoid the new character entirely from this point, because I think for the Scream
the old
franchise,
characters, you mean?
Yeah, the legacy characters, I'd rather it's because. My only real problem with Scream is, as much as I like seeing the legacy characters, it would be a better film without them, objectively, because it's trying to juggle so much. Like the main cast of the new characters, who I do like, I only really realized I liked in the third act, because the film's juggling so many characters up to that point. So there are some scenes quite late in the film where I'm like, oh, I actually do quite like these people. But it takes a while to get there. So I hope we stick firmly to the new cast with the films following
Scream 6. Yeah, they probably will.
They will. But yeah, I mean, there's a pull in the fandom, because obviously people are like, no, you got to keep the old characters who we love, but screw that
line
of thinking.
Neve Campbell's like gone. So.
I do, yeah. I mean, I love Neve Campbell, favorite final girl by far, but for the sake of these new films, it needs to focus on new characters. And the new characters that we have are interesting and layered, and all the main characters is nice and layered. So,
nice. So that's your number one.
That is my number one. Yes, that's my top five of the film franchise of the 2022. That's the term.
My top five.
Yeah.
Of 2022.
Yeah.
Top five favorite film. Number five is, I think it's on Netflix. I think it's an interesting film. I don't know if you probably haven't seen it. I don't think many people have, but it's I think it's a British film called Boiling Point.
Right. I haven't.
So it's a film that's all shot in one take. Mm-hmm. And it's basically about, it stars Stephen Graham as like this, he's like a chef at this sort of fancy restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's basically a night from hell kind of thing. It's about this just building tension sort of thing. So he's got this restaurant and kind of, it's all one take. So, it's not like one of those films that's like made to look like it's all in one take. It is one take.
Right.
And it's set in this kitchen. Oh, like in this restaurant, and it's basically of like a night of I don't know if it's like the grand opening of his restaurant. I can't remember exactly, but it's like, and it's just sort of like it's called Boiling Point. It's about all the tensions that come up from like the high stress of working in this kitchen.
Yeah,
and because like so it's a night running it. You know, like rude customers, you have like some like internet vloggers, you have his sort of the guy who trained him sort of thing, that Stephen Graham's character, like his like mentor who he moved away from to open a restaurant, who's a little bit bitter about it and everything, who's brought a critic to the thing, and there's someone with a food allergy, and it's just all the tensions building on this sort of or this night. Oh, that's a very important night for the crew. At the same time, he's got like problems at home, and it's just like it's one of those films that like you know it's all one take. It's really like the cinematography, the acting, the directing of it all is really like masterful.
Yeah,
it's really a really suspenseful movie because of all the because you're just following this character as this night is just sort of getting worse and worse and worse for him.
Yeah.
And it's because he's getting to boiling point, you know?
Yes.
And that's the whole thing of its name. And it's such a gripping movie. I wasn't expecting it at all. I know it got like some BAFTA nominations, it should have won because it just absorbs you, this sort of film. Like it's like really suspenseful. The acting is phenomenal from all the cast members. I think his like is it sous chef? I don't know, the second in command sort of thing. The actress who played there is just phenomenal. Should have won the BAFTA that she was nominated for, but didn't. It's Stephen Graham's amazing in everything he's in. He always sort of elevates what he's in. He mainly sticks to like British stuff, but it's still he's just in this. He's on top form as always. It's just a really like. It's just a great little British indie film that a lot more people should be seeing. You know, it's just fair a really enough. Well-made film. So that's my number five. Number four is the Best Picture winner of 2022. And that's Coda.
Right.
I haven't seen it. Yeah. I saw it. It's on Apple TV.
Last year.
I don't know.
2021.
But I saw it this year.
Right. Fair.
I saw it this year. I don't know if UK releases and
maybe yeah.
Anyway, I saw it this year, so I'm putting it here. It won the Oscar this year, so I'm putting it there.
Okay.
It was like at the like I remember last year's Oscars, 2021's Oscars because it's 2023 now.
Yeah.
And I thought like it was a strong year with a weak winner because I wasn't a huge fan of Nomadland. Whereas last year or 2022, yeah. I thought it was a weak year for the Oscars with a strong winner. Like, I loved Coda it's about like this, like a deaf family, but mostly about the daughter who can actually hear.
Yes.
And how she wants to, be a singer. She loves singing, but her family is so dependent on her because she can hear, because they are what do you call it? Fisherman sort of thing. And they need to be able to hear in order to operate because it can be dangerous and stuff. So it's her pull between doing what she wants and her responsibility to her family. And the film is just like, although, yeah, kind of a little bit, maybe probably the most conventional movie in terms of its like story structure and everything, but the emotional heart that the film has and the performances in the film is just really, really effective. And I loved the film. I thought it was the film I enjoyed the most in that year's Oscars season. And I was so happy when it won because I didn't think it was going to. It was kind of like an upset win because I think The Power of the Dog got like the most buzz.
Right.
And it was just, it's just like, you know, it's just a well-written, well-acted performance. I mean, like Troy Kotsur played the dad, I think won the Oscar for supporting actor, which was great. Because I thought his performance was great. It's like what I love about it with the deaf actors is because they're having to act through like facial expression and hand gesture, not through actual speech, and so you're getting the power of their performance even without having to say a single word.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many moments. It's like it's kind of a bit of like a I don't know, like it's a quite an emotional movie, but it kind of earns its emotional moments, and it's just very effective in what it does. And I thought it was a very deserved Oscar win.
Fair enough.
So yeah, I just loved that film. I think yeah, it was the right choice, and it was one of the best films of the last year or so. So yeah, just love that film.
A contrast between your and my top things of the year.
Yeah. Number three is my favorite horror film of last year.
Right.
I didn't see Scream because I hadn't seen Scream 4, but now I've seen Scream 4, so I will see Scream. But my favorite horror film of last year was Barbarian.
Fair.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
It's on Disney Plus now.
I didn't know that it was a horror film.
Yes, it's a horror film. The thing is, I can't say anything about it.
Right.
Because this film, why I love this film is because I went in, because the trailers are great, because the trailers like show you nothing.
Right.
And I went into the movie not really knowing what the film was about, just knowing it was a horror movie. And it's just like, it's just wild.
Right.
It's just wild. I love the, it was just, I read a thing that the guy who wrote and directed it apparently just sort of made it up as he went along.
Right.
Kind of thing. Just made up the, like, kind of was just like midway through writing, like, now let's go on this trajectory kind of thing. And it works. It uses time jumps quite nicely.
Okay.
To kind of to hook you in with suspense. It almost has like cliffhangers in certain aspects of its narrative. Which it then follows on onto later on. Like, mm-hmm. they aren't necessarily jarring time jumps, but they kind of work they work quite nicely to kind of, because it's always sort of subverting what you're expecting to happen and what you're expecting to come. And from, like, the more I watched it, although its ending is very conventional, and the film's so good that you kind of allow it, but mm-hmm. it's almost comical how conventional its ending is, but the rest of the film is just so sort of out there and just going balls to the wall, just like throwing like everything, seeing what sticks, and it works. It's a very intriguing narrative. It says something. It's not completely random. It does have something to say, something quite relevant to say,
mm-hmm.
which when reading it, like watching it, and just sort of taking in what it was doing and what it was saying, I'm like, that's actually a really interesting thing that the film is sort of saying. That's actually quite important. And interesting the way that they've done it in the horror, use the horror genre to tell quite a timely, very relevant sort of bit of information. And it's just best to go in knowing nothing. It's on Disney Plus, so if you have it, watch it. It's really, really good.
Okay.
And yeah, it has great performances. You have Bill Skarsgård and Justin Long are in it, and they're both great. I can't remember the name of the main actress, but she's great. It's just a well-written, well-directed horror film that's sort of, it's scary, it's funny. You know, it's also quite funny at times and everything. It's mm-hmm. just, it's a great sort of, it's just, yeah, a great film that, like, to, well, when a filmmaker just sort of throws ideas and sees what sticks, and then it actually works out to make quite a kind of interesting result, mm-hmm. sort of thing. So it's definitely a horror film worth checking out, but going in knowing nothing.
Right.
So that's my number three. Number two is a foreign language movie. Right. And that is The Worst Person in the World.
Okay.
See, this got, I think it got, not only, this was, I think it got, it was a, it didn't win any Oscars, but it got nominated for two. It got nominated for, you know, the international film, mm-hmm. which it lost to Drive My Car, which I haven't seen. And it was also nominated for original screenplay. I don't know if it was original screenplay, but it might be adapted. I'm not quite sure. But screenplay, it got a screenplay nomination,
right.
for, like, which is like, oh, the fact it pushed on outside of the international thing was pretty cool. But it was, you know, Drive My Car was also a Best Picture nominee, so it was never going to win. But I saw this film, and it's basically like an anti-rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's taking a rom-com and just subverting it. And the way it does it is, like, it does it in the way that is why I think, like, foreign language films are sometimes produced the best films just ever. Because they can take the narrative risks, because mm-hmm. then they don't have the then, as opposed to English language movies where they have to appeal to masses, they don't have that risk.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They just they can take narrative risks, and this one does that, and it pays off big time. Like, it's just such a, like, it has some really, like, creative sequences, really, like, funny moments.
Mm-hmm.
It's got heartbreaking moments. It's the way its tone sort of shifts throughout, sort of thing, is really good. The way it's a very interesting character study as well. Of you know, it's about worst person in the world. I think it's like this whole thing, perspective of, I guess, like, what women kind of go through. And I saw it at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. kind of thing. But I just remember it being such a very interesting subversion of rom-com tropes,
right?
And it was just a, it was, you know, it was funny, creative. It's just like everything I love about foreign cinema was in this film.
Right.
And I loved that it broke through. I wish it won the best foreign language thing, but either way, it's the one of the best films I saw this year. Might be the number one, but I saw it so long ago, I kind of can't remember everything that I loved about it. But yeah. And now my number one is probably the number one that everybody has. Not you, but it's what everybody, all the award things seem to be giving it to.
Mm.
And that is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes. I do actually want to see this film. It does look quite good and look like something I would like, but yeah.
Like, it came out the same time, or around the same time as Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
And both films, you know, they deal with multiverses and everything. Whereas I loved, you know, Multiverse of Madness, but I love a more indie take on things.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly what this is. I love the directors, Daniels, who rose to fame because of their viral music video for DJ Snake's Turn Down for What.
Mm-hmm.
And then off the back of that did their debut film, Swiss Army Man.
Right, yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Daniel Radcliffe as a farting corpse. And they have this unique way of doing really stupid and like really, really stupid and like absurd comedy, but also without losing the heart of what their film is about.
Yeah.
It never becomes a gimmick and never undermines the heart of their narrative. And that's what I love about these guys, how they're able to balance the serious and the comedic so seamlessly. It's such an art form, and it's like they're a master of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And Everything Everywhere All at Once is like continual proof that these guys are just know what they're doing. Like, the film is so, like, it takes multiverses in a bit more of a more intellectual way than, say, you know, Doctor Strange does. It's a lot more complex in how it handles it, but it's. And it visits, you know, like they go to dimensions where people have hot dogs for fingers and stuff, you know, like silly shit like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just like they have like a whole Ratatouille reference at one point, which is just like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Like, it's so crazy and like, it's just so crazy in its sense of comedy, and it works. It's also a great comeback for the actor who played Short Round in Temple of Doom. It's his comeback movie because he watched Crazy Rich Asians and saw like, oh, I actually can be in movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there is a place for Asian people in cinema.
Mm.
And he comes back and his performance is great. Michelle Yeoh, I think, yeah, Michelle Yeoh's central performance is great. The film is just, it has heart to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of heart to it about, because at its core is about, you know, I guess like family, the difficulties, I think, amongst the main character and her, like her husband and her daughter, and the family drama of the whole film, and also like, I guess, like mental health issues as well. But it also has this just, but it also has the absurd comedy as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's my kind of film. It's weird, but it's also heartfelt.
Yeah.
And it's just everything that I am about. And it makes me laugh. It made me cry, you know, and it made me feel various emotions. And that's all I can ask for a film. Because as I say, what I like look for in films is a film that makes me feel.
Yeah.
And with Swiss Army Man, which I love, you know, it didn't make me like cry. It made me laugh, but it made me cry. Mm-hmm. But this one made me cry. Like in the cinema, and it's the only film this year that's done that. So of course, this has to be like my favorite of the year. I think I've only seen it the once though, and I think as the awards season is coming up and it's getting a lot of nominations, which is great for, because it's the A24 is actually competing at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to win, but like, you know, it's still great to see, and it's their highest grossing movie. But yeah, I just love that Daniels is still going strong.
Yeah.
They're like kind of they're filmmakers that are definitely ones to look out for, because they're definitely a unique talent working today.
Yeah.
And Everything Everywhere All at Once, just a great movie. You know, Thinking Man's Doctor Strange too.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of, it's funny, heartfelt. It's just got it's got it all going. So yeah, those are that's my 5-1, but I wanted to like shout out two films that I saw this year that didn't come out this year. But right. I only saw them this year. First is The Empty Man.
Yeah.
So I know this, it. Yeah, this that I saw it on Disney Plus. It's like this. It's kind of like Hereditary meets The Wicker Man.
Okay.
And everything like that. It's made directed by a guy called David Pryor who did the autopsy episode.
Isn't that Midsommar? Hereditary meets The Wicker Man. And feels like I'm imagining Midsommar.
I mean, like more in the sense of like it's a Wicker Man narrative, but with the Hereditary sort of more grounded style.
Sure, sure, yeah, yeah,
kind of thing. And that's an interesting thing about like this. When a girl goes missing, this kind of retired police officer has to who's like next door neighbors and family friends of them. Decides to investigate, try and find her, because the police probably aren't going to do anything about it. And they hear that she went missing. After this, they summoned this urban legend called the Empty Man, which is basically if you blow into a bottle on a bridge and say the Empty Man like three times, on the first day you'll hear him, on the second day you'll see him. On the third day, he gets you. That's cool. The whole thing.
Nice.
And so it's basically about this police officer and what he uncovers on his investigation of this urban legend, and to try and find this girl. It's a really like interesting. It's quite long. It's about 2 hours, which is quite long for a horror film. It has a very long prologue, which I was surprised by, before the film actually like properly like begins and you meet the main character, you're about 20-30 minutes into the film.
Right.
But it's a really interesting film to see what people think about it, because I liked it. I thought it was a very ambitious film.
Right.
And it's very creepy and everything. It's a very intriguing film to see how people like. I'd be interested to see what you think about it.
Cool.
You know, I'd be very interested to see what you think about it. Yeah, it's a very. I don't know what else to say other than like it sticks with you. Sticks with you. And yeah, it's a film I want to like get out there and get people to like see, because it's like I'm very interested to see what people think of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't get that much of a release or buzz or anything like that, but yeah, it's a good film. I'd just be interested to see people's response, because I think it's quite divisive,
right?
But yeah, I liked it though. I think it's a good movie. And then the other one is a film called The Night House,
okay,
which came out last year or like 2021, and it's directed by a guy called David Bruckner, who made the most recent Hellraiser movie.
Okay.
And the film basically stars Rebecca Hall, and it's basically about this woman who, after her husband committed suicide, and she's like living in her house and starts to notice sort of paranormal stuff going on in her house. And it's what I loved about the film is it's a horror film that sort of, that handles like grief and depression in a very creative but somewhat it's very smart but also very emotional sort of thing. It's using its head and its heart to make this film, so it has emotional weight to it, and it's a lot of intellectual decisions. It's just, I think it's one of my like all-time favorites. Because it's like, it's everything I look for in a film.
Yeah.
It was a creepy horror. It goes to creative places. Its horror is somewhat tangible, you know, in that it's sort of, it's one of those where the horror is something that you can kind of, that is representative of something.
Yeah.
And the way it handles that is interesting. It has a, yeah, it's just, it's, it's like, oh yeah, Rebecca Hall's performance is just great. The it has very good jump scares in the film. So very effective jump scares throughout the film. It's just a very interesting like character study, but also you know, horror drama sort of thing. That's again on Disney Plus. I think it flopped, but it really didn't deserve to.
Right.
That's a really, really good film. Way more than I was expecting it from it, because I didn't think I was going to get much from it. But no, it's great. It's also a bit of a mystery to it and everything. And some of the scenes are just really like, has some really like relatable scenes about, I guess, like about showcasing, I guess, people's empathy towards and everything like that, and how a character may react to certain things when they're kind of like, how like grief makes people react in certain situations, which I think was like, that's handled really well. And yeah, it's just a really good film.
Fair.
And it's loads of really great scenes, but yeah, definitely seek that out. That's also Disney Plus. So if anyone wants to see that, that's where you watch it, or like you buy a DVD or something, if you even do that. Probably on Prime. I don't know. Just watch it. It's a great film. It's just a really good film. I love it.
Will do.
So I think it's a Fox film. I think that's why it's on Disney Plus.
Right.
Or Searchlight, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just two films I wanted to shout out that weren't a 2022 release, but I saw in 2022 and just wanted to plug, basically.
Cool.
Get people to go see. So yeah. That's odd.
That's our favorite films of the year. If we're plugging, I saw Stand By Me this year in a cinema in America. Like, it was an old theater, basically. They were playing old films, and such a good film. I feel like it's hard to. I mean, I guess, yeah. So watching any film in a cinema compared to watching at home is a completely different experience, especially an old film like that. So like if I say something like it doesn't feel dated or whatever, I don't know, like would it probably if I watched it at home on TV? I don't know, but I guess mirroring again still what I've been saying about some other things, like the way it depicts the relationship between the main characters is so good. It's probably the best example of a group of friends that I've seen in anything. I thought the ending could have been a bit more climactic than it was. Something more. Have you seen it?
I have seen it.
Yeah, I wanted
a couple of years ago.
I don't know what exactly how I would rewrite it, but I feel like it could have been more climactic because it almost peters out for me. Like
it does a bit. Yeah, but I think that's kind of its whole thing that they kind of go off on there.
But I mean, like, in terms of enjoyment, I guess, like, it's basically a bunch of the kids going on a journey. It's a bunch of scenes of them being kids kind of thing. But there's a sense of build. And then when it kind of gets to the climax, it feel like it's almost like The Warriors, which is so much worse of a film. But I enjoy The Warriors as a... I think because we discussed this and then you listed a bunch of criticisms and I'm like, I agree entirely with everything you're saying, but I love it for it because it's a cult film. Like, it's so not well done in some ways, and some it's of the characters of those... are creepy and it's not great, but it has the same thing of having the climax to the film. It's just not good, and it's I feel very similarly towards those two climaxes. Although Stand By Me, even there is better in its climax. But I think I teared up at Stand By Me as well, actually. Which I wasn't expecting to do. But yeah, good film. I don't know what... I feel like I wasn't expecting much and I ended up really liking it.
Nice.
Yeah. So
yeah.
There are our films of the year. Whoa.
That is... I mean, 2022's done.
In conclusion, we've looked back. I need to watch more.
In conclusion, you need to watch more this year, because in the next episode we'll talk about what we're looking forward to in 2023.
Cool.
There's quite a few things coming out. You know, a lot of things we're going to be looking forward to.
Yeah.
Some of which are probably obvious at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, still look ahead to what's coming out. Like, talk about some of the most anticipated films and, like, TV shows and stuff. And, yeah, that'll be our next episode.
Cool.
Indeed. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you again for listening to us. And, yeah, we will be back with another episode very soon.
We're on Spotify now, if you didn't know.
Yeah, listen to us on Spotify, on the website.
I don't know if you can like, subscribe, follow. I don't know. I don't know what the how
like, subscribe,
works.
Follow.
Do all of the things.
Send us, let us know what you want to hear us talk about. Yeah. We'd like to hear that. We got a Twitter page.
We do?
Tweet at us. Yes, we do.
Gosh.
We have,
I'll
we
be
have
following
a Twitter
that.
Page.
I don't know about you, audience.
Tweet at us what you want us to talk about. You want us to talk about, like, I don't know.
Recommend us films and stuff.
Yeah.
Probably not TV series, because that's a big old commitment, but recommend films.
I can recommend us TV series, and we can politely decline.
If you recommend something like, watch ER, then be like, that's a big old commitment. But
give us an episodic review of a soap opera, starting from the beginning.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, we'd like to hear what you like. Would like to hear from us, and we have, you know, we're planning episodes, and you know, we got our next one all lined up. But we'd still like to hear what if there's any ideas that anyone else would, what you just like to hear us talk about, kind of thing, because you know, it's we're doing this for the listeners,
awesome.
And we'll talk about what the listeners want us to talk about.
Also, feel free to tell us why we're wrong. About how Avatar's not that great, which it isn't. My list is limited by the number of things I've seen, and so it's a list of some things that I genuinely think are great, some things that I just enjoy. But yeah.
Yeah. And let us know what your like bests and worsts of the 2022 are, or like your most anticipated. If you can comment somewhere, you know, we'd love to hear it. We love it. That sounds so sarcastic, actually.
Yeah, no, we do, actually.
Okay. But yeah, until the next episode, thanks for listening to the Babadoons. Yay!
Bye!
Bye!
You have been listening to a One Flower Two Turtles audio production. For more information on all our radio shows and podcasts, check out our website, 1f2t.co.uk. Sounds of the 1f2t, the sounds of life.